Well, first of all, ladies and gentlemen, you know that I believe no one gets quoted in a bad cause more frequently, at least in this community of Southern California, whence this broadcast originates, than the late curmudgeon H.L. Mencken, who was once made so bold as to say, nobody ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public. Attention, Mr. Mencken, the Howard Stern television show has been canceled. I know Mencken's not in a position to pay attention, but if he were, it's a hypothetical call to attention. Ladies and gentlemen, I am wondering, and maybe this would be a good. I know we're not allowed to gamble or to encourage gambling. We can encourage gambling now, can't we? I think we can, but we're not allowed to actually gamble on the radio yet. But this would be a good kind of a pool, an office pool kind of a deal. You know, it's Christmas time, and it's just time to foster both bonhomie and a little competitive, get the competitive juices flowing in the office again, despite the bonhomie. So this would be a good subject for an office, but, you know, because football, a lot of people don't care about football, don't know about football, but this, everybody can get in on this. When will it officially on CNN stop being America's new war? I mean, we're in the third month of it. When will it stop being America's new war? Of course, then the question would be, what would it be then? America's war? America's old war? The same old war? America's new war, if we go to another country, of course. I don't know if they have enough letters for that. But anyway, that would be, let's just bets on when it would stop being, in CNN's mind, America's new war. Of course, I always still campaign for America's new improved war, because that makes it really more American when you stop to think. You don't even have to stop to think about it. Don't stop to think about it. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank the good people at the St. Louis International Film Festival for treating me and my film Teddy Bear's Picnic so wonderfully a week ago. That was the final film festival appearance of the picture. Next stop, a theater near you, if you live within two blocks of one theater in New York, L.A., and San Francisco, or move. It's a great time to go to New York, L.A., or San Francisco. It's a great time to go to L.A. I don't know why people don't come to Los Angeles in November. This is the most beautiful time of the year here, and nobody's here because they don't know. It's absolutely amazing here. But anyway, thanks to the people in St. Louis. If you want to travel somewhere, I know it looks corny and kind of hokey, but because you've only, like me, had seen it in pictures or on television. But when you get to see the St. Louis Arch up close, first of all, it's a big arch. It's a big old arch. Much bigger than you dreamed. But everything's bigger than it looks on TV. But if you get to see it at night, you also realize you've never seen the texture. The arch has texture. It's a kind of a composed of stainless steel panels. It's really worth looking at. So, A, the arch, and B, my other travel note from recent film festival travels, this one to the Honolulu Festival, and aloha to you. But I discovered something driving around the Honolulu area, aside from the fact that you don't really want to be in the Honolulu area at this point in time, because it's Miami. But here's something I bet you didn't know. They have an interstate highway in Hawaii. Something to think about as we say, hello, welcome to the show.
Still sees truth quite easy. Fish.
Ah, computer fish booty.
Pickled herring.
Ah, pickled herring booty.
Laksarooty.
Ah, laksarooty.
Dunkin' bagel. Dunkin' bagel. Dunkin' bagel. Splash in the coffee.
Dunkin' Bagel. Splash in the coffee. Dunkin' Bagel. Dunkin' Bagel. Dunkin' Bagel. Splash in the coffee.
Matzo balls. A matzo ball to me.
A filter fish.
A filter fish a booty.
Pickle herring.
A pickle herring.
Lots of rooty.
A lots of booty.
Dunkin' Berry. Dunkin' Bagel. Dunkin' Bagel. Splash in the coffee. Dunkin' Bagel. Dunkin' Bagel. Dunkin' Bagel. Splash in the coffee.
How about a bowl of gefilte fish?
Cold?
Hot?
For the path was deep and wide, from footsteps leading to our cabin. Above the door there burned a scarlet lamp. And late at night a hand would knock, and there would stand a stranger. Yes, I'm the son of Hickory Hollow's tramp. Yeah, the weeds were high, the corn was dry, when Daddy took to drinking. Him and Sally Walker, they up and ran away. Then Mama shed a silent tear and promised 14 children. I swear you'll never see a hungry day. When Mama sacrifice the pie, the neighbors started talking. But we were much too young to understand the things they said. All we really cared about was Mama's chicken dumplings and a goodnight kiss before we went to bed. Mama passed away and left the ones who loved her. Each and every one is more than grateful for their birth. And each Sunday she receives a big bouquet of 14 roses with a card that reads, "The greatest mom on earth." Whoa, you know the path was deep and wide.
And yet, Little Green Apples was the one that made it into the obit. Oh, well, hello from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show for the Sunday after Thanksgiving. We haven't talked about hot property in so long. So long. Hockey Hall of Famer Wayne Gretzky and his actress wife are building. Is he doing like a Jimmy Carter thing? No, he's building I think metaphorically building. That is, causing to be built is really what this means. I don't think Wayne is out there with the hammer and the plumb line. Would he be? I don't know. Maybe. 12,000 square foot home on 6 acres. That's a lot of building overlooking Sherwood Country Club. I've been overlooking that place for years. In the Thousand Oaks area. Expected to be completed next summer, the Georgian-style residence will have 7 bedrooms, a guest house, a pool house, and a gym. The cost, not including land, more than $4 million. The Gretzkys have maintained a home in the L.A. area since they were married in 1988. Okay. A Beverly Hills home that had been owned by Damon Wayans, star of an ABC sitcom, and his wife. Oh, the ABC sitcom is called My Wife and Kids. The home that had been owned by Damon and his wife of 16 years has been sold for $2.8 million as part of their divorce proceedings. You get the irony there? He has a sitcom. You get the irony there. In August, Wayans purchased a 6-bedroom, 5,500-square-foot home in Toluca Lake, not Tom Brokaw's favorite place to visit, Toluca Lake, for about $2.2 million. His wife filed for divorce last year. The Beverly Hills house has 7 bedrooms. This is a theme show today, would you say? Because it's a 7-bedroom show so far. 7 bedrooms and 9,600 square feet. It also has a pool. I don't think so. Jose, the Beverly Hills home where Jose Menendez and his wife Kitty were killed in 1989 by their sons. This is in the real estate column. The Lyle and Eric's parents' home has been sold in the $3 million range, about the same price as it fetched when it was sold by the Menendez's estate in 1991. The couple paid $4 million for it in 1988. In 1990, the estate rented out the house to a Saudi prince for a few months at $40,000 a month. You sure it was a prince? Wasn't a guy with a beard and a thing. The asking price this time was $4.15 million, but of course it sold for $3 million because it was the home of where Lyle and Eric did their little thing. All right, that's the hot property. The recount is in again. New York City officials have changed the way they report the official toll of dead and missing at the World Trade Center in hopes of improving accuracy. According to Associated Press, the official count is now 3,646. Yes, of course. You will be the first to know any updates. But now, let's get scared, shall we? We have been laboring, ladies and gentlemen, you and I, under the misapprehension that computer hackers are bad guys. The people who send viruses to your computer are bad guys. Not so fast. The FBI is working on software that could insert a computer virus into a suspect's computer capable of reading every keystroke on the computer. The software known as Magic Lantern. That's nice. What could be wrong with that? Operation Furry Kitten. That's, you know, then nobody's going to ask a question. Operation Cute Puppy. The software known as Magic Lantern installs key logging software that can capture keystrokes typed on a computer. The virus can be sent via email. Once on the targeted computer, it waits for the suspect to launch an encryption program, then logs the passphrase used to start the program, giving agents access to the keys needed to decrypt files. An attorney for the Electronic Privacy Information Center says privacy issues may arise. It would be possible to observe every keystroke typed by the suspect, even if a court order specified only encrypted keys. So, next virus you get may not be from a jerky kid in the Philippines. It may be, ladies and gentlemen, from our very own FBI. And now, I'm getting to wonder if maybe I knew something by making this a regular feature of the broadcast, because the apologies are just flooding in the now. Now we're really into the apology groove, unless I'm just more on the qui vive for them. But I don't think so. I think there's an absolute statisticians will have to check me out on this, but there's an absolute increase in the apology count. As the pollen count went down, the apology count went up. Start with London. The BBC apologized to Oryx Natural Resources, a diamond mining firm. The BBC issued an unprecedented apology to Oryx. It was read out on the flagship news at 10 o'clock on the BBC TV, TV1. It was a full minute long. Anchor Peter Sissons said, quote, "We stated that Mohammed Khalfan, who was in jail for the 1998 bombing of a U.S. embassy in Africa, was the same man as Kamal Khalfan, shareholder in Oryx Natural Resources. We were wrong about Oryx Natural Resources and Mr. Khalfan," unquote. That's Mohammed Khalfan is not the same man as Kamal Khalfan. Oryx is suing the BBC. It's been in the controversial in the past, but the original broadcast was picked up by networks in the U.S. Who knew? Europe and Africa. Work at the mine owned by Oryx in its mine in Zimbabwe, I believe, was halted by government authorities. Credit lines were pulled by lenders. Orders were canceled. The company is looking for a firm to calculate the damage to its reputation. That's a good job. Wouldn't that have been good on career day if they offered you that? You could be part of a company that calculates how much a person's reputation has been damaged.
Well, what do I have to study for that?
The damage to the reputations of the company's directors is very significant, says the deputy managing director of Oryx. The first email I got after the broadcast says, quote, "You're totally unemployable now." The BBC argues that although it got the facts wrong, it was acting responsibly and in the public interest by confusing two Khalfans. By the way, the Mohammed Khalfan, the one who's in jail, it's one word. And Kamal Khalfan, the shareholder in Oryx Natural Resources, it's two words. But it's Khalfan. What do you want him to do? More apologies, ladies and gentlemen. As I say, it's tough to know which is the apology of the week, but these are all good. Representative C. This is in the United States now. Moving back homeward. Representative C. Saxby Chambliss. You'd have to run for Congress with a name like that, wouldn't you? C. Saxby Chambliss? What could you do with that name? I guess you could get a job estimating damage to corporate reputations, but they didn't have that job when he was... He's chairman of the House Subcommittee on Terrorism and Homeland Security, don't you know? And he's a candidate for the Senate. And he's now apologizing, well, kind of apologizing for remarks to Georgia law enforcement personnel suggesting they just turn the sheriff loose and have him arrest every Muslim that crosses the state line. In a letter to the Valdosta Daily Times, he contended that his comments were taken, say it along with me now, out of context, and should no way be interpreted as my view of what should happen. If my remarks were offensive in any way, I apologize. I guess that's an apology. Chambliss personally sought to persuade a reporter to kill the story using his remarks, and he asked the local sheriff to help block publication. God bless America. Well, don't you think? An aide to Chambliss said he did not know what the congressman did in connection with the story. That's called deniability. Chambliss says he agrees that this war is against terrorism, not Muslims. I regret that any comments I made might have been misconstrued and misrepresented my true intentions and beliefs regarding this issue. So don't, when he says, turn the sheriff loose and have him arrest every Muslim that crosses the state line, please don't misinterpret him as thinking that Muslims should be arrested, ladies and gentlemen. And if you do, Representative C. Saxby Chambliss apologizes. Now, moving up the apologetic ladder, Pope John Paul II. How about that? In his first message sent to the world directly over the Internet, how do you know it's him? Now, they had pictures of him. He apologized to victims of sexual abuse by priests and other clergy. For the first time in his 23-year-old papacy, the Pope sent the document to churches around the world by pushing a button on a computer and dispatching it over the Internet via email. Only one paragraph of the document was dedicated to sexual abuse. The apology was the latest in a series of times the Pope has asked forgiveness from those who had been hurt by members of his church. He also apologized. This was while he was on the internet, he took the opportunity to just get a lot of apologies off the papal chest. He also apologized to Australia's Aborigines and other indigenous peoples of Oceania for past, quote, shameful injustices of the Roman Catholic Church. The Pope wrote the Church apologizes unreservedly, for the part played by its members, especially where children were forcibly separated from their families. In case you don't know, ladies and gentlemen, either one or two generations of Aboriginal children in the 20th century were taken from their families to be raised in white culture, because it would be, they'd have a better upbringing that way, it was thought at the time. These are the so-called stolen generation, for which the Prime Minister of Australia has not yet apologized, but we're waiting. We're on the alert. We're up all night, every night, waiting for that. This follows the Pope's apology to China last month for historic wrongs committed by its representatives in that country. The document underlined that the identity and culture of the Aboriginal people were gravely threatened and said it would support their aspirations, all Aboriginal people, would support their aspirations for a just solution to the complex question of the alienation of their lands. I don't know if I'm reading that properly. It looks to me like the Pope is endorsing Indian gambling. I'll check on that. And why wouldn't he?
I must confess what you say is true. I had a rendezvous with somebody new. It's the only one I ever had. Baby, baby, don't you go away mad. Cheating shows and it never goes. You got a reason to be mad, I suppose. For he was only just a passing fad. Baby, baby, don't you go away mad. His kind's a dime a dozen. That's not the kind I want. Who'd ever thought your cousin would be sitting there in that restaurant? I must admit that you feel upset. What do you say that we forgive and forget? Come and kiss me just to prove you're glad. Baby, baby, don't you go away mad. Don't be mad, don't be mad, baby. Don't be mad. Don't be mad.
a farewell salute to Tommy Flanagan. This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, the New York Times, in their special section yesterday, A Nation Challenged. And it's beginning to sound, I know America's new war is tiresome, but A Nation Challenged. Maybe it's just me. Well, of course it's just me. Who else is here? The guy who answers the phones usually is off. How about this? This is parenthetical, but the guy who answers the phones here normally during this broadcast to take your complaints is off the next 2 weeks doing, participating in his particular hobby, reenacting battles from World War I. Now, I knew they did Civil War reenactments. Did you know they did World War I reenactments? That was the worst war ever. What's to reenact? That was just, ugh. This tells you people really still do. Even now that we're in a war, America's new war, we have too much time on our hands. Or something. Or too much imagination. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes, A Nation Challenged. It's beginning to sound a little too euphemistic, doesn't it? Doesn't it sound like it's just like a politically correct way of saying a nation with a hair lip or something like that? It's, you know, there's more going on than challenged. It's a challenged nation, don't you know? But we're taking care of it. Anyway, in that section yesterday, there was a story about the changing fortunes of merchants in Afghanistan as the Taliban pullback apparently continues. The story from a city in northern Afghanistan, I believe it was Herat. Like, we all know cities in Afghanistan all of a sudden. Oh, yeah, Herat, you know, over there by Mazar-ul-Sharif. The story from Herat was of two sets of merchants, one whose business is improving suddenly. People who owned electronic stores, where they sold basically used and rehabilitated television sets and stereos, because all that stuff was forbidden under the Taliban. They banned music, ladies and gentlemen. So, you know, the next time you think the music on this broadcast is crappy, call the Taliban. So the merchants in Herat, you know, just down the road from Mazar-ul-Sharif, the who were specializing in electronics, not electronica, electronics, they're doing well now all of a sudden. They're having a banner month. They're selling used TVs for two or three times what they ordinarily would, because people are so hungry for television. That's how sad things are in Afghanistan. They're hungry for television. On the other hand, there are merchants who are crying the blues right about now, according to the story in the Times. And those are, of course, as you would anticipate, the guys in the business of selling burqas. Because suddenly the gals don't want burqas anymore in Afghanistan, since the Taliban, which required women to wear burqas, are retreating, leaving these merchants with a lot of burqas on their hands. Thank God for the presence of some Americans in that country who might just be able to use their ingenuity to help out.
Wow, it's freezing out there.
It sure is. And what a pain in the neck to have to carry an umbrella and wear a warm coat.
Mm-hmm. And you're still soaking by the time you get indoors.
I sure wish there was something we could wear that could give us head-to-toe protection against the elements all winter long.
Dream on.
Now, staying fashionable can be as patriotic as staying warm. Liberty Veils introduces the hottest thing for wintertime comfort since the Afghan, the amazing burqa. Long worn by Afghani women for comfort and safety, now this versatile garment is available in this country for the first time, thanks to a special purchase from the leading Afghani designer, Edizioni's Talavani. The amazing burqa offers all-in-one protection against the elements and everything else. And now, thanks to deliveries from the newly liberated North, the amazing burqa explodes in a riot of hot colors, from blackout black to Himalaya blue.
Wow, carrying all these groceries in the rain was a breeze.
Mm-hmm.
And the see-through mesh is a lifesaver.
I'm impressed. These burkas really are amazing.
2 months ago, the amazing burka was a must-have fashion essential from one end of Afghanistan to the other. Now, thanks to this special end-of-season offer, an amazing burka can be yours for a fraction of what it used to cost poor women. Specify your choice of colors and whether machine washable nylon or hand finished linen. When you order your amazing burka, and a portion of the proceeds will go to the Red Cross Fund for other causes. Buying anything helps your country right now, but buying an amazing burka helps you too. So call now or point your browser to libertyfails.com and order your amazing burka today. And a note for Santa. The amazing burka makes a perfect gift. One size fits everything.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, the progress of America's New War is, according to the media, it's great. There are very few voices being heard that are saying, well, maybe the Taliban retreated because they'd rather fight a guerrilla war than defend a bunch of cities. Very few people are saying that on the air yet, but it's early. Let's all meet again a month from now and see if that's still true. But anyway, basking in the current state of success is President George W. Bush. He's at Camp David this weekend. I believe, just with his wife and daughters. I don't think the other President Bush is there. Donald Rumsfeld is jetting back and forth, trying to pacify, at this point, the Pakistanis, who were reported to be pretty darn upset about the fall of Kabul, or Kabul. Which do you like? Would you like me to say Kabul or Kabul? I remember when I was a kid, I came across an AP pronunciation guide that said it's called Kabul. Never forgot it. So I wince every time I hear Kabul, but I just winced for you. And the Pakistanis are denying that they're flying their guys who were fighting on the Taliban side out of the country, and we're staying mum on that, even though we control the airspace in Afghanistan, and we would know if it were happening. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Colin Powell is trying to mend things in the Middle East. He delivered a speech this week where he set out the United States' determination to get re-engaged in the, quote, Middle East peace process, unquote. And, you know, on a holiday weekend like this, it might be a time for a president number 43 to make a phone call to a president number 41, don't you think?
Hello. Hey, 41, happy Thanksgiving. This is 43 calling from Camp David. Well, good to hear from you, son. Barbara and I tried to get up there, but no, I know the security's been fierce. Laura and the girls just barely made it through. Hey, how is Laura? Oh, she's fine. You know, she's off reading. Mm-hmm. I swear if books hadn't existed when Laura came along, she would have had to have invented them. Well, we're talking about Laura, 43. Uh-huh. Nice touch to have her do your radio address last week, but you want to make sure you're not planning to do that again. Well,
no, I'm not.
But well, having your wife do your radio address, I don't know. Seems sort of Jimmy Carter-ish, don't you think? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, congratulations on a successful little war. How do you feel? Oh, okay, a little sinus thing because of the humidity here at Camp David. Never was my plan to spend so much time here, you know, but after September 11th, the whole vacation picture for me changed. Meant, how do you feel about Rumsfeld now? Well, what can I say? I mean, he's on TV every day. Tommy Thompson, you can't even see with pay cable, so that's how we feel about Don. He's just got natural star power, you know. He's like an Anglo Jose Canseco. Well, hate to say I told you so, but now Colin's the guy that gets my panties in a twist, you know. I mean, he slows down our initial military sweep because supposedly we don't have a plan in place for a multi-ethnic post-Taliban government, and then, you know, when the handcuffs finally come off the military and it turns out that we don't have a plan for a multi-ethnic post-Talibanic government, where's Colin? You know, somewhere in the Middle East, meddling, you know? Colin's a good man. Oh, please, your big mistake, aside from violating no new taxes, was listening to Colin. Otherwise, Saddam Hussein wouldn't be running Iraq today. He'd be running a falafel stand in military prison. Don't think they have falafel stands.
Well,
listen, 43, don't let the right-wing crazies put too much vermouth into the national martini here. We had no mandate for going after Saddam, and you still don't.
Mm.
You attack him, and the United States is more alone than Dan Quayle at a Phi Beta Kappa reunion. Well, look, I'm very mindful that the evil ones may be heading for the hills, you know, digging in, daring us to smoke them out, run them down. You know, it may look like we're winning, but it may be more ephemeral than a Mets winning streak in May. I'm aware of that. But
43, you just stay the course, and you get Bin Laden's corpse verified by, you know, the Surgeon General, if you have to, and then you turn your focus to the economy. See, that's where the events got the better of me. I got distracted by the Kurds.
Yeah, well, look, it's interesting to have Thanksgiving without you guys.
Oh, both know you had a limited number of clearances under the new security structure.
You know, the Secret Service is pushing me hard.
Mm-hmm.
They got me to cancel the tours of the White House for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, well, if it was up to them, you'd be delivering this State of the Union address in an empty House chamber, and the congressman would be watching you on TV from home. Now, would it...
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to bounce off of you. We were thinking about a wartime State of the Union in an empty House chamber. I mean, I've already done the speech to a joint session of Congress, so... So this would be something new, and since we're not going to have Dick Cheney sitting behind me anyway, you know, dispensing with the rest of them just seems prudent. But the question we can't seem to get a consensus on is, are there applause lines? And if so, where's the applause supposed to be coming from?
Is this something the Secret Service is pushing? Because they can't be sure of every single member of Congress.
This comes from Ashcroft. You know, he had a dream of a State of the Union in an empty building and thought, if ever there was a time to try it, you know?
Listen, he's not the only one to have that dream, but you're walking a delicate line here, 43. The folks who want you to open the government back up like a Friday night pep rally are just waiting for you to make one wrong move.
Oh, I know it. Laura's already on my back about closing down the White House tour. She's afraid it's going to push back her network special a good year or two.
Well, she's wrong about that. Not being open for regular tours just makes a TV tour that much more valuable. You tell her that.
Yes, sir.
As to this State of the Union thing, I think you might want to have a few of the senior congressional leaders attend, sort of a symbolic presence by Congress. After all, it is their building.
Well, that was Ashcroft's other idea.
What's that?
Why not just do the State of the Union from an undisclosed, secure location?
Let me think about that one. Better get back before your mom starts giving more leftover turkey to Millie if that dog gets one more upset stomach before Monday.
Well, give me a call first of the week, will you?
Will do. And 43?
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, huh? You know, I have so much to be grateful for. You and Mom, beautiful family, a war that's going to end better than yours, a 90% approval rating I'm going to be able to keep.
Talk to you Monday.
Bye-bye.
Espelhado em seus olhos, maior me causa o efeito. Concha no ouvido, barulho de mar, pipoco de onda, ribombo de espuma e sal. Nenhuma taça me mata a sede, mas o sarrabulho me embriaga. Mergulho na onda vaga, eu caio na rede, não tem quem não caia. Caio na rede, não tem quem não caia. Caio na rede. Às vezes eu penso que sai dos teus olhos o feixe de raio que controla a onda cerebral do peixe. É, às vezes eu penso que sai dos teus olhos o feixe de raio que controla a onda cerebral do peixe. Nenhuma rede é maior do que nem quando ultrapassa o tamanho da terra, nem quando ela acerta, nem quando ela erra, nem quando ela envolve todo o planeta, explode e devolve pro seu olhar o tanto de tudo que o topo é.
vida. Se a rede é maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove. Se a rede é maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove. Se a rede é maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove. Se a rede é maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove. Às vezes eu penso que sai dos teus olhos o feixe de raio que controla a onda cerebral. Às vezes eu penso que sai dos teus olhos o feixe de raio que controla a onda cerebral. É maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove. Se a rede é maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove. Se a rede é maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove. Se a rede é maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove. Se a rede é maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove. Se a rede é maior do que o meu amor, não tem quem me prove.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. Very briefly, just an item about trends in the motion picture business. This is, though, from the Washington Post. It's open to everybody, but I'll read it for you. In cineplexes nationwide, audiences are sitting longer than ever through what theater owners politely call the pre-show. A generation or so ago, the pre-show might have meant a short comedy or a cartoon, and perhaps a couple of coming attractions. Now the pre-show is all business. Slides advertising local businesses, commercials for sneakers and sitcoms, and an ever-growing number of trailers. The Warner Brothers release of Harry Potter is being closely watched in the theater business, not only because of its box office, but because of its effect on the pre-show. Potter may be the movie that sparks a trailer war. Along with the 8,000 copies of the film it sent to theaters, Warner's included 5 minutes of promotions for its other upcoming movies, double the time limit under a long-standing agreement between theater owners and movie studios. The pent-up demand for Harry Potter gave Warner's leverage. The company took it. Theater chains had to agree to play the pre-Potter trailers to show the movie. But other studios wanted on the Potter bandwagon. They hounded theaters to play their trailers, too. Thus, Potter audiences are waiting longer to see the feature than for any film in years. Instead of the typical 3 or 4 trailers, some patrons are sitting through as many as 8 or 9. Result? A movie that begins 20 minutes or more after the announced starting time. Both the theater owners and the Motion Picture Association of America, representing the studios, reportedly raised objections to Warner's plan of 5 minutes of pre-Potter trailers. The 2.5-minute rule has been in place for decades, says Bethlyn Hand, senior vice president of the Producers Association. It started when there weren't many trailers around, she said. Now there's a whole plethora of them. Not that half plethora we've been used to. Some executives say Warner's actions could permanently alter the fragile agreement that guides how trailers make it to a movie screen. The worry is that Warner's screen hogging might lead to similar practices. Other studios with a blockbuster on their hands could insist the theater owners play more of their trailers too. Says one industry executive who insists on anonymity, if that happens, it will collapse the voluntary program that has guided the industry and may result in fewer showings of movies to make room for all the trailers. A brighter day looms, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature. Well, maybe we'll all just go see trailers. We know they're better than the movies anyway. What's the fuss? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave WBCQ the planet at 7.415 megahertz on your shortwave dial, on XM satellite radio, wherever you are across North America, and on your computer, whenever you want it, around the world at www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would just be like it being America's new war forever, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.